Hello, my name's Kate Rowles and I'm interviewing you for the Wellcome Trust as you're taking part in Anthony Gormley's artwork, One Another. The date today is the 12th of September 2009 and the time is 3:45 p.m. If I can please ask you to say your full name, your age and where you come from.
Okay, my name's Malcolm Halliday, I'm 51 and I live in Plymouth in Devon.
And how are you today, Malcolm?
I'm fine, I'm very well and I'm very excited.
Can I ask, first of all, what was it that motivated you to apply to be part of One Another?
Well, I was first aware of the project, I suppose, when there was a competition in the National Gallery a couple of years ago with various artists submitting ideas for the fourth plinth, and members of the public were asked to vote and say what they thought was the best idea, and at the time I thought this was a really, really good idea then. So I was very excited when it was chosen, and then sort of looked out really for an opportunity just to take part, although to be honest, without any real sense that I'd get selected, so that was incredible.
And when you found out that you had got a place on the plinth, how did you decide how to spend your hour on it?
Right, well, I had various ideas to begin with. I toyed with the idea of dressing up as a lion and just sitting there, like the lions round Nelson's Column. I thought about holding my own tea party, but couldn't quite work out the logistics of that. But then I was in London over the summer and saw a few people during the time we were here on the plinth, and I'd been watching online, and I was very aware that although there is some description online and you get a sense of something about the people in the hour, I thought, but actually there's much more to those people than just what they're showing in the hour. There's much more to everybody than often what we see. So I then started thinking, well, how could we explore more about who we are and identity? So I then started thinking about, well, what I could do to try and tell people more about myself during the hour. So that's what one of the things I hope to do. And then thought, but what about the people watching? How do they get involved? The people who aren't going to be on the plinth. So hopefully I've incorporated something into the hour that will allow them also to respond. One of the things we had to do when we accepted our place was describe ourselves in three words. So I'll be asking people who are watching around the plinth and maybe online as well to do the same, to phone me and say, here's my description of me in three words.
And so what are you going to do on the plinth today?
I'll have the board inviting people to phone me with their description of themselves. I've also made myself 10 different t-shirts that seek to answer the question, who am I? Ask the question on the front, who am I? And on the back, there are 10 different statements about who I am. And hopefully that will just give people a broader picture of me.
And now that you're actually here, how are you feeling about going up there and doing all this?
Well, I wasn't sure how I felt until I walked into the square about 3/4 of an hour ago and I watched people, and I just stood there and thought, this is great, I'm going to be part of this, isn't this fantastic? Although I do wonder how long an hour it will seem. Will it, you know, will it go very quickly, or will I think, oh gosh, this is a long, long time? So I'm a bit apprehensive about that, really.
And what kind of experience are you hoping to get out of taking part in One Another and standing on the fourth plinth overall, do you think?
I think at one level, just the very fact that I'll have taken part in something that only very few people will have done. The 2,400 people will be selected. That in itself will be good. I think one of the things it's done, of course, is there's various friends and family have travelled from different parts of the country to be here. So there are people here today who I haven't seen for a long time. So I'll have got that out of it, renewed contact with friends and family. And I think also in the end to have been part of something that will in future years, I hope, be significant. People will look at it and say, actually, look at the creativity, look at the variety, look at the breadth of things that people in Britain can bring to a project like this.
And can I ask you now to say a little bit about yourself as one of the people standing on the fourth plinth? How would you describe yourself?
How would I describe myself? I think I'm quite a creative person. I'm lots of thinking. I think I'm very good at asking the question why all the time. My job is I lead a church fellowship in Plymouth, and I think one of my tasks with the group of people there and in the community where I work is to ask people to be asking that question all the time. Why? Why are things the way they are? Can things be better? Can we change society? Can we change individuals and make a better world? So I think I'm, that's really the essence of who I am. I'm I like arts. I love reading. I spend a lot of time in local schools in my job. I'm governor of a local school. I write for the local paper regularly. I write a column for them. So it's quite a lot of creativity in what I'm doing week by week.
What's the column that you write in the newspaper?
Right, there's a Saturday, the paper's Western Morning News, and there's a column on a Saturday that's really sort of thought for the week, and I've been doing that for 5 years now.
And how did you get involved in that?
Oh, right. Well, I've done some writing before. I've had some children's books published, and I've written other things for magazines, but in the town, in Plymouth, where I work, the person who'd been writing the column had been doing it for 10 years, and he was moving to Switzerland. I knew him, he was a friend, and I quite simply said to him, actually, what's going to happen to this? He said, I don't know. I said, I'd be quite interested in doing it. He had a word with the editor had a word with me, and 5 years on, I'm still doing it.
And what do you normally write about? What's your thought?
I always obviously try and reflect some aspect of help people think about issues of faith and belief. I try to get them to reflect on their own situations, pick up things that have been in the news. Today's column, because it's a Saturday today, is actually all about the plinth and my thoughts about work on the plinth. So I hope it's something that people will be able to relate to in terms of their everyday life, but also maybe push them a little bit further to think about maybe other issues that they don't always think about.
You mentioned that you work with the church,
mm-hmm.
in leading a fellowship.
Yeah.
Can I ask you to say a little bit more about your work in there?
Right, yeah, it's called Chadderwood Baptist Church. It's about 15 years old. We don't have a church building. We meet in a school in Plimpton, which is part of Plymouth. It's a very informal group. There's usually about 50 or 60 of us there on a Sunday, a mixture of adults and children, young people. It's very informal, very relaxed, hopefully a very welcoming place, and hopefully a place from which we then go out and seek to try and make a difference in the community. So we are involved in things like the Soup Run for the homeless, where we regularly go out and feed people on the streets. We run a kids club for kids in the streets around where the school is during the week. Many of us are involved in schools in terms of being governors of local schools. We're involved with the Plymouth Food Bank, which provides food for people in crisis situations. So hopefully we're a good community in ourselves, but we don't look inwards, we look outwards and try and make a difference to where we are.
And do you have a sort of a role to play in terms of a service?
Right, yeah, I'm the pastor of the church, so I'm responsible for what happens on a Sunday by and large. So tonight, when we've finished doing this, we shall have to drive back to the West Country so that I'm ready and hopefully awake for Sunday morning. But we have one morning service a week. We have lots of groups meeting in homes for study and situations like that. So I'm responsible for not necessarily doing it, but ensuring that it happens.
And what does that bring to your life, playing a part in the church?
Right. Well, the most exciting, I think, is with young people who I see I'm able to help when they're grappling with issues of faith, and actually helping them to make sense of all the big questions that they have, and to see sort of young people who then become established as believers and Christians themselves, but then go on to really seek to make an impact on their community. Then I think, well, that's really exciting. I've been part of that. I mean, may not have been the whole part, but just to have been a little part of that. And for people who are struggling, to be able to have the freedom, because the church employ me, that I'm free when people are in need or in trouble, to actually say, I actually can come and spend time with you, I can come alongside you, I can try and help, because this is my role. And in a busy world, lots of people just haven't got the time to do that, whereas I'm free to go and say, actually, I can do this for you. So that's good.
And outside of the church, what are your other interests?
What do I do mainly? I like going to the theatre, I read all the time, I play squash. I don't know what else is it really. I mean, living in Plymouth, it's a great place just to drive around. You know, fantastic, the sea on one side, the moors on the other. And I regularly now, we've lived there for 8 years, and I still drive around now and get excited just to think, I live here. What a fantastic place just to wander around.
And is Plymouth where you're from originally?
No, I'm from Manchester originally. Although I was brought up in Manchester, I worked in Coventry for about 13 years before eventually moving down to Plymouth, so slowly I'm making my way down. I've nearly got to the end of the country. So.
And how did you end up in Plymouth?
Ah, right, well that's quite interesting. I was working for a church in Coventry. I'd been a very big city centre church, very organised, very structured because of its size. So this is where I am now, is big contrast, this informality where we almost make it up as we go along. But I was looking for a change, but I wasn't sure when. I didn't particularly want to move to the West Country. But some friends of mine who were part of this church had, they'd been looking for somebody to lead them and couldn't find anybody. And so they phoned me up and said, would I be interested in talking to them about going? And because we were friends, I didn't think I could say no to them. But I have to say, I went to talk to them thinking, there's no way I want to come and live in the West Country. Lovely though it is, I think, why would you want to live here? This is where you go on your holidays. But I have to say, once I went down there, I just thought, what a fantastic place this would be to live, and what a fantastic group of people to be involved with. So when they asked me, I said, yes, please. And off we went, say 8 years ago.
And how did you get involved in church work? Were you always a church
goer? I suppose I was always brought up to go to church as a child and a family. What significantly was as a teenager, I suppose, at the time, we're not teenagers, we're asking questions. I was thinking, well, this is part of my habit, this is what I do, but is it what I, you know, what do I actually believe, how committed I am? And I wasn't sure, and to be honest, for quite a long time, I think I just rode along the back of the experience of other teenage people, and I liked being with this teenage youth group and the church things they did. I was very happy to be involved, but I have to say, I don't think it meant much to me personally. And I came to a point really where I was challenged by somebody speaking in a meeting to actually say, you know, is this what you're committed to or not? And I thought, I have to make a decision, and so I did. And that was 36 years ago, and I have to say, it's the best decision I ever made. It's not been the easiest decision, because it takes you to all kinds of places, it challenges you in all kinds of ways, but the reality of what I committed myself to, I've never ever doubted. And you know, although I would never want to force other people to say, you've got to believe as well, I do want to be able to say to people wherever I can, look, all I can tell you is what I've experienced. It may not, you know, you may not have experienced it, but all I can share is what I know, and urge you to find out for yourself.
And how did you know that it was the right decision?
Right, how did I know to believe? I think there were lots of reasons, really. I think partly because I couldn't make sense of what I read. I started reading perhaps more intently, especially the accounts of the life of Jesus. I've been brought up obviously in Sunday school, and I knew lots of these stories, but I think, well, what does it mean? What does this, who is this person? And if he is who he said he is, and if he really did do the things that he said he did, what does that mean for me? And I think part of, there are all kinds of reasons. One is, I thought the evidence, internal evidence of what I read in the accounts of the life of Jesus seemed to stack up. I think there's a theologian called J.B. Phillips who once said there was a ring of truth about what you read, and I think I found that. So that was one thing. Secondly was the friends I knew. There was something about them that when they talked about having faith, I knew that it meant something much deeper than it did for me. I thought it meant going to church and trying to be good, but they had a much more intense experience, and I could see in their lives that it had changed them. So there was so that was the second thing, really. And in the end, I suppose I just had to take a risk and say, well, if it's true, I'll, you know, we call it a faith, that's what it is. You take a step and say, is this going to work out? And I have to say, I believe it did. And although 30 odd years later, I would say I'm still as committed. I'm more sure about the essentials of what I believe. Perhaps as a teenager, there were things I was very absolute about that now I think they're not important. They're not the essential things of life. But I think that's just typical of teenagers. We're absolutely sure we know everything when we're 19, and 10 years later we suddenly discover we didn't know as much as we thought. But in terms of basic conviction about being committed as a Christian, I don't think I've changed that at all.
Can I ask you to say a little bit about your upbringing?
Right. I was born in Manchester, working class family. My dad had to leave school when he was 14, simply in order to go to work to help support his family, which was a great challenge for him, because he would have loved to have gone to train and to teach. And although I think looking back now, I can see, as certainly in my childhood and teenage years, we were not well off as a family, but I was never aware of that being brought. We were never thought, really, that, you know, there was more to be had. We were just really happy with what we'd got, and that was there was a real sense of satisfaction, really. But we were always encouraged by my dad to, not in a pushy way, but just that we could do things and we could achieve at school. And things like the fact that, I mean, I think was the first member of my family to go to university, and it was never a question in our family. My dad just assumed that, yes, you can, if you put your mind to it. But I think it meant a great deal to him to see all his children, four or five children, go to university, because that was something he would have longed to do. The other sort of feature of our upbringing was that my eldest sister had severe mental and learning disabilities. But again, she was fully part of the family. She was brought up with us, and it was never ever thought that there was anything odd about the time and the attention we gave to her. And I think the example my parents gave us really spoke to us about the way we care for others and the way we treat others. And interestingly, so from my dad's ambition point of view, myself and my two brothers and a sister have all ended up in different ways in sort of teaching sense. I mean, I'm in the sense that through the church I have a teaching role. My younger brother and sister are both teaching in state education, and my older brother works for a large bank doing their training initiatives. And I just think, you know, that for my dad that would have been the fulfillment of everything he'd wanted. So in a way, we've achieved for him what he couldn't do, and have very different lives now, but partly and largely because of the encouragement he and my mum gave us.
And what was your relationship like with your family members?
Well, my mum and dad both have died. So there's my two younger brother and sister, and my older brother. We get on well, but we see each other very rarely. We live in different parts of the country, which again, I suppose, is the nature of life nowadays, that people scatter around. When we do get together, it's fine, but we don't get together very often. Increasingly, I suppose, with some of my not immediate members of the family, sort of aunts and uncles, especially since my dad's died, I feel that we've had increased contact and relationships, and partly because I think he did a lot in terms of taking care of his brothers and sisters and being concerned for them, because his father had died many years ago. So I think he'd always had the father role really for his family as well. And so there is a sense now when I think I look at some of my aunts and think, well, I have that responsibility now to care for you. So we have much more contact with them, even though they live quite away. And in fact, two of my aunts have come down today to be here today, which is good.
And what's important for you now in your life at the moment?
My life, well, I apart from regularly thinking, ooh, what would it be like to retire and what would we do? and then putting it on one side. I think what I don't want to do is to settle into a passive old age, really. In fact, just a month or so ago, when my wife and I were on holiday and we were talking about things, what do we still want to do? And looking back and thinking, you know, of all the things we have been able to do and how great that is. And I just came up with this conclusion for myself. I suddenly said, you know, what I want to do is, he said, I want to cause trouble. I want to, not in a destructive way, but actually, you know, where things are still wrong, where there's still injustice, where people are being treated, I don't want to sit quietly back and say, oh well, that's the way it is. I still want to get involved and say, life doesn't have to be this way. There are better possibilities to pursue. So that's my hope, is that I will not go gentle into the good night, as Dylan Thomas said.
And is there anything else that you would like to mention about yourself or to add about the project?
No, I mean, I do think it is an incredible opportunity. I was asked the other day, is it art? And that's the big question. I think, you know, hopefully the friends who are here today will be able to go off afterwards and debate this. I have to say, I don't think what I'm doing is art, but I think the composite sense of what's going on here is art, that there is a picture being built up here, and Anthony Gormley has enabled exactly what he said, this portrait of Britain, and I just think we're just really privileged to be part of it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.